Dave Fanning on 2FM.
Hold on, I'm going to stretch across here and say, hey, Taylor, how are you
doing?
Yeah, all right, sorry. I just walked into the room. Very good. I just turned something off there. No, I didn't. Taylor Jenkins-Reid is here and just walked out. She's got a coffee. She does, yeah.
Yes.
Are you all right, Jeff?
Yeah, okay, I'm good.
It takes time to get up on those seats. So while you're doing
does.
That, I'm going to introduce you to who we're talking about here, because Daisy Jones and the Six is what I'm talking about. Taylor Jenkins-Reid. It tells the story of a 70s rock band recording a hit album. It looks at the highs and the lows, of course, of fame, and it's been described as a stunning story of sex, drugs and rock and roll, basically. Amazon, by the way, has commissioned a 13-part series based on the novel, and it's going to be produced by Reese Witherspoon, who went to town on loving the book before it even got into the shops, I notice.
Yes.
Yes, indeed. So the author of Daisy Jones and the Six, film and TV writer, Taylor Jenkins-Reid, is here now, and everything's ready. You're on the seat. You're okay, yeah?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay, very good. A bit of confusion about with readers of whether Daisy Jones and the Six were a real band. Was that the intention? Great, you're glad there is.
Yeah, you know, yes, I guess it was. I wasn't trying to fool anybody.
No, that's not what I... Yeah,
but
yeah.
People feeling like it was a real band, I thought, would help the experience of reading it. It would feel more immersive if, you know, all of it lined up so that you started asking yourself, oh, wait, did this really happen?
Yeah. And by the way, also, I presume the solid research that you would have done started out by looking at that Eagles documentary.
Yes.
What is it about that documentary that everybody... I mean, I know people who hate the Eagles, but say, but you got to see this documentary.
That's... I mean, I don't hate the Eagles, but I wasn't a big Eagles fan.
Yeah.
But no, it's great. I think part of what it is about that documentary is that it is pretty raw at times. Like, they get
what
very
you're
vulnerable.
Saying is they're the bitchiest bunch of guys
well,
you've ever
yes.
come across
I mean,
in your entire life.
Yeah, I think that's
and
really
for
what it
their
is.
Their entire lives.
Yeah.
Get over it.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're saying that. Mm. Yeah, that is what it is. There's a lot of pettiness there that is really fun to watch.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it. Actually, I saw them live about 2 years ago, and they were all very well behaved on stage.
Okay, well,
and
good.
They had about a 3-hour show, a big, huge thing. Timothy Schmidt was... it was all very cool, you know?
But I think that's what's so interesting about it is that, you know, it looks like everything's cool on stage, and then when you start putting a camera in front of them and asking them how they really feel, suddenly all this bitterness comes out, and that's what's so fascinating about it.
Actually, I should tell you another thing too. When they played here outdoors in the RDS about, this was 15 years ago, I'd say, I know a guy who was doing the stage, and he had like gaffer tape, and it was like white bit there, and everybody had their own little part of the stage where they stood on.
Right.
They all got 5 limousines from 5 different hotels.
Sure.
But most importantly of all, if the machine head of your man's guitar went in there, the other guy would literally kick him out of the way. They hated each other.
Yeah. I mean, that's just fun. That's just good fun.
Yeah, exactly. So with that in mind then, like, that's not... like, we're talking 70s rock really here. Why, like, what's to you so different between, say, 60s, 80s with 70s? 70s was drugs.
Yeah. Well, that's part of it. Yeah, that's a big part of it. I think also it was a great time in L.A. specifically. There were a lot of bands coming out of L.A. And I like writing about Los Angeles. I live there. I've written... all of my books take place there to some degree or another. And so, you know, when you look at... you know, Linda Ronstadt and Jackson Browne and the Eagles.
Yeah.
You know, it was a really vibrant time in the LA music scene, and so that's what drew me to it.
It was a time that made people feel really jealous. I would love to be in those canyons.
Yeah, right.
11 months of sunshine.
That's exactly it. It's very evocative. You can picture yourself in a home with a canyon. You know, walk down to the Sunset Strip and you play a show, and you know, I just wanted to go to that space.
Yeah, and it was all kind of cool. As opposed to, I have to say another one right now, because only 2 days ago I saw The Dirt. Have you
seen
it?
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen it yet.
It's just like, ooh, I think the 70s with the drugs might have been better than this nonsense. I mean, seriously, Motley Crue. What are we talking about? Late 80s, early 90s for Motley Crue?
Yeah.
It's frightening stuff.
Which is a whole other different time on
the
Sunset Strip.
It's the same Whiskey A Go-Go, the same Sunset Strip.
It's the same places, and it's a different scene, which I was thinking about. You know, I think for me, 70s rock was a little bit more fun and called to me a little bit more than like the hair metal,
the
you
whole
know,
Guns
Sunset
and Roses
strip.
Thing.
But
and all
look,
that, yeah.
I mean, I'm a huge fan of Guns N' Roses. I have been my whole life.
Would you go as far as Motley Crue?
I might not go as far as Motley Crue, but I'll show up for a Motley Crue song here and there. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, the first 5 minutes of the movie will blow your head off. And in fact, just on that note about making movies of all of these kind of things, because this is a fictional story, and yet I think obviously some people would read it and think it's real, and they might even go to somebody, hey, have you ever heard of a band called Daisy?
People have been Googling the band.
That's what I mean. Yeah. And by the way, the really weirdest thing of all is, it will happen.
Because
music, which hasn't been made for this book, will have to be made for the movie.
I've never heard
of that before.
It's, you know, fiction is, I think, melding with reality a little bit, because if you read the book and you think, well, I want to hear this album and I want to see what this band looks like, you know, once they make the TV show, there will be an album and there will be a band.
But is that a real pressure for the people writing the songs, or is that a real, like, they've already got 20% of sales nearly? It's a brand already.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, fortunately, it's not. I wrote the lyrics to the album, which are in the back of the book, but I, you know, it's not my responsibility to write the album, which I feel very fortunate for, because it is built up within the book as, like, the greatest selling album of the 1970s. So it's a tall order. We'll see how they do.
Well, good luck with that with these other guys. Yeah.
I think they'll do a great job.
Somebody here at 51552 wants to know the name of that Eagles documentary. Was that good? It's just called The History of the Eagles.
Yeah, History of the Eagles. I think it's pretty readily available.
It's gettable. Yeah, it is. Okay, well then, let's take a look at this. I mean, can I mention the two words Fleetwood and Mac and go from there? What do I do about them? I mean, is that what we're nearly talking about here?
Yeah. Well, you know what? We're talking about them in terms of my inspiration for it. We're not talking about them in terms of the plot or the characters. But I love Fleetwood Mac, and most specifically, I love Buckingham Nicks. Like, that is, you know, Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham are people that I have just been enamored with for a really long time, and their relationship has always fascinated me. And so that was part of the inspiration for it, is wanting to write about two lead singers who have a very complicated relationship with each other. And so then I set about making up a new band. But hopefully, as you're reading it, it feels like you're spending time in that place.
Well, the soap opera of the two of them is still going on. I mean, Buckingham is now out of the band. He's in the hospital getting a big operation.
He had open heart surgery.
And he was out of the band anyway, and he's suing them for $12 million because they're touring without him.
I think he won.
Oh, did he win?
I mean, I don't want to speak out of turn, but I think he won. I think it was settled. Maybe that's right.
And Mick Fleetwood put out a statement saying, this is great because it's always been a fluid kind of thing. And people, no, it hasn't, Mick. No. Without Buckingham, the band isn't, well, I shouldn't be saying that. They're playing in Ireland, sold out. You bought tickets, but anyway.
Here's what I will say. I felt the same way. I had my management team who sold the project to film and TV for me. You know, my manager is this guy who's been helping me in my career for a really long time. And he got me on the phone and he said, I got us tickets to see Fleetwood Mac in December. And he was so proud of himself. And I was like, without Buckingham, it's not Fleetwood Mac. Yeah. Was the thing I said, and which was so obnoxious because someone was just giving me a gift. But we went. And let me tell you, like, it's pretty great.
Oh, it's got Neil Finn, is it?
Yeah.
And your man from the Heartbreakers.
That's right. Mike Campbell. Yeah.
Yeah.
They were really fantastic. And Stevie Nicks is Stevie Nicks. Like, you know, she's worth price of the admission. And Christine McVie.
No, but I saw the band about 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago. And, like, Lindsey Buckingham was 80% of the gig. He's
incredibly, incredibly talented. Yeah. And when you look at, you know, a lot of their best stuff, you see how he was so necessary to create it. So it does hurt me to watch this band without him in it.
Actually, we should really go into a big conversation. What did you think of him when he did Tusk? Do you think he did the right thing? Because that's him.
I know people have strong opinions. You know, I started off not into Tusk, and through the research of this, having listened to it so much, like, don't sleep on Tusk. That is a good album, and that is a great song. Yeah, Tusk is a great song.
Yeah, he didn't just deliver the hits as the previous two albums had done, and fair play to him for that. You know, he brought the band somewhere else. Yeah. There's so much. I could just kind of talk about this band. By the way, can I just say that while Fleetwood Mac isn't Fleetwood Mac to you without Lindsey Buckingham, Fleetwood Mac isn't Fleetwood Mac to me without Peter Green.
I get it.
Basically, you get it because you know I'm older.
No. Actually, I think, you know, it's funny because I was in London last fall, and we were talking about this book to booksellers, and a lot of people would come up and be like, you know, Fleetwood Mac was never the same, once Buckingham Nicks entered it. And I was like, right, they got better. And they're like, no, they got worse.
They got different, that's for sure. It was a different band.
It was a different band.
It wasn't the real blues-based band. Yeah. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Okay, and also they had 4 or 5 years in between when nothing was happening at all. Okay, where are we? Yes, sorry, let's go back to what we're talking about here, which is Daisy Jones and the Six by Taylor Jenkins Reid, which, by the way, you're going to be in conversation with Sinead Crowley in Whelan's tonight at 7:30. That's in Whelan's in Wexford Street. Tickets online at whelans.ie are at the door as well, okay? Daisy Jones and the Six. Now, the praise for this thing has gone, like, completely overboard. Is the door opening to the big screen, sorry, the series on TV, is that Reese Witherspoon?
Yeah. I mean, Reese Witherspoon read the book very early and picked it up to adapt it. And then she also chose it as her book of the month for this month in March.
Yeah.
And I think both of those things make people pay attention. And so I've been very, very thankful for that.
Okay, who is Daisy Jones?
Daisy Jones is, when we first meet her, a groupie on the Sunset Strip, but she feels like she's destined for bigger things and she wants to write songs. She's got big red hair and she wears a lot of bangles and she doesn't wear a lot of clothing and she has no interest in hearing anyone else's opinion about that. And so she, you know, she wants to be a singer. And she has to work. She's a great singer, but she's not a great songwriter. So she has to work to become a great songwriter.
Well, especially when she's told at one stage, you're not a songwriter.
Right, right. I mean, it becomes very... I mean, she thinks that she is, but she hasn't worked very hard at it. Because most things come easy to Daisy Jones.
One of the things she wants to work hard at, or not so much work hard at, is just be herself entirely. Just, I'm going to be who I want to be. As opposed to, say, Karen, who tries to appear as genderless as possible kind of thing. Who's she and what... Like, did you want the two?
Yeah. So Daisy and Karen are very different. Karen's the keyboardist in the band, and you know, Daisy is so beautiful and so talented that in certain ways the world will bend to her. Karen is a bit more like the rest of us and has to navigate the world as it is. And so Karen's response to that is that she wants to be one of the guys so that she's treated and respected as a musician. And so she goes a different route. But I think... I'm more of a Karen. I think most women at that time probably, but it was very important to me that both Daisy and Karen respect each other's way of doing things.
Or of having to deal with the music biz and all this. By the way, just on that music biz thing, I mean, with Bohemian Rhapsody making $1 billion at the box office, the floodgates are open now, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Well, also the Elton John,
that's what I mean.
You know, one's coming out. Like,
Although they have to take out 15 seconds out of the movie of a gay scene in the bed or something.
Wait, do they really?
There's murder going on about it at the moment.
Oh,
no. In the last 48 hours. Yeah.
I didn't know that. Yeah. I don't know how I happened to write this book and then have it coming out at this time when all of these rock stories are coming out.
I presume you saw and liked, what do you call it, A Star Is Born.
Oh, loved it. Loved it. Yeah. I can't get enough of that. I saw it twice in
the
theater.
The Lady Gaga character in that, is there anything I can say in terms of the way she played that role as opposed to people in the past has anything to do with Daisy in this book? Or is that a stretch?
You know, no, I think that movie was really exceptional for both Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga, and their performances and their characters were great. I think this book focuses a little bit more on the rights of women to tell their own stories and express themselves as they see fit without the interference of men's opinions, which that movie doesn't quite as much.
Okay, by the way, there are guys in the book as well. There are men in the book. So the male voices, where do they come from?
So the main male voice is Billy Dunn, who's the other lead singer of The Six. And, you know, I mean...
Can I just say, sorry, is Billy Dunn and is Daisy Jones... Is that the two front people of Fleetwood Mac?
Yes. Okay. No. Not. I mean, kind of. No. Really. Really. What it is they're a male and female lead singer who have a lot of interpersonal problems, and so they're writing about it in their music. And so that dynamic is very much Stevie and Lindsey. They are very dissimilar to Stevie and Lindsey. Billy is an addict who's in recovery for most of this book, and so that plays a very big part of his story. But him and his brother Graham, who's in the band, and Warren, who's a drummer, and Eddie, who is the rhythm guitarist, you know, they're all these dudes who are telling this story from their point of view, as we see this story going on from a couple of women's point of view. And it was really fun. This was the first time that I've really written this many male characters with this strong a point of view in a long time.
And when you were growing up, like with the Fleetwood Mac thing, maybe percolating to make this book now, to do this book now, the Daisy Jones, were you watching Fleetwood Mac to the point that you'd buy Rolling Stone and see those covers where they're all lying on the bed together and how iconic all those sort of photographs were? Probably Annie Leibovitz, I've no idea. And but all that sort of stuff, and it wasn't just those two.
Yeah,
every single person in the band had a relationship with every single other person.
Well, I mean, that's the thing that.
And do you think that helped sell the two albums past 20 million each?
Oh my God, yes!
Like the soap opera, the
absolutely,
Friends.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think like that's what's so funny to me about when we're talking about Fleetwood Mac and we're talking about the soap opera of it. It's like, yeah, Stevie and Lindsey are the ones that you're watching, but we don't talk even that much about the fact that Stevie Nicks had an affair with Mick Fleetwood for a significant period of time. You know, they are fascinating to watch because they have this all of these interpersonal relationships that are influencing their art, and then they're giving you the art, and then they're letting you peek, you know, when they're on stage to see how they're really feeling. I wanted that in this book. Daisy and Billy have a very complicated relationship, and it plays on stage. So people within the book show up to see what they're going to do.
Tell me about Taylor.
Yeah, I mean, what do you want to know?
Well, who's she?
You know, I'm a writer in Los Angeles. I'm originally from Massachusetts, but I always knew that I wanted to move to L.A.
Yeah.
I thought I wanted to work in Hollywood for the majority of my life. I got a film and TV degree. I moved to Hollywood. I became a casting assistant and worked on films. But then I realized that I wanted to be a writer. And so I wrote my first book, and then that one didn't sell, so I wrote another book, and that one did sell.
Is that The Seven Husbands?
No. So this book, Daisy Jones and the Six, is my sixth book.
Right.
My first book came out in 2013, and then I wrote three more, and then I wrote The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, which was a big transitional book for me. It was, I had been writing contemporary. This is more historical. It took on darker and you know, maybe bigger themes. And I'm really proud of that book. The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo is also about a famous person, but it's about an actress who is at the end of her life and you know, going on the record about all of the scandals and marriages that she's had. So I did that one. And then with this one, I just was thinking, well, I want to keep writing about famous people. I want to write about the difference between the legend of something versus the truth of it, which is, you know, if you boil down both The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo and Daisy Jones and the Six, that's what we're talking about. What did it look like versus how did they feel as they were living it?
And what about coming up with the idea of doing it in an interview style, this book? I mean, you know, why did you choose that particular style of writing?
I think It really was baked into the very premise for me. I don't think I could have written this book without it being in this style. I really wanted you to feel like you were immersed in the story of a real band.
And one way of doing that is oral history as opposed to reams of exposition. Is that
Yeah. And I think, you know, it makes it, if you're hearing from every single person directly, I think it makes it easier to imagine yourself there, to feel like you're in the middle of it. And look, if Daisy Jones and the Six were a real band and they were finally going to tell you what happened the night that they broke up, I think that would be told in an oral history. I think that's how we would do it. And so I decided to take that nonfiction format and use it for a fictional story.
Well, then, if Daisy Jones and the Six were a real band, might Daisy Jones and the Six be a real band? Because something's going to happen in terms of TV.
I know. Well, let's see. It could be like the Monkees, right? Where they put together a band for a TV show and then they become a band. I mean, that would be very cool.
Right, so you think there's a possibility that we might be able to see in concert at some stage?
I mean, wouldn't that be wild? But that does happen sometimes, like on TV shows, like the TV show Nashville. I think they ended up doing concerts in character for those songs. So who knows? Yeah. You know, anything's possible.
Wow, yeah, indeed. Well, just as a matter of fact, the Civil Wars, duo that I've seen a few times on TV, but don't know an awful lot. They had one great song. I remember He Was Always Tall and She Was Always Beautiful, and it was very weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
What happened?
Well, you know, as far as I know, they met in a songwriting workshop. Their chemistry was off the charts. They formed this band, The Civil Wars, but they were both dating or married to other people. And they did two albums. And I loved those albums. And then they just broke up. And it was very abrupt. And they will not go on the record about it. They haven't talked about it. I've scoured the internet. I've tried to find anything I can. It's a mystery why they broke up. And I was really fascinated by that and really heartbroken that there were no more albums. It felt like just when they were getting great, they stopped. And so that's very similar.
Yeah.
Daisy Jones and the Six. You know, they put out this incredible album and the world is watching and thinking, what are you going to do next? And we won't know because nothing, you know, they break up.
The question is why. She is a very privileged person though, isn't she? She's not somebody who knows how to work for a living as such.
Daisy,
I'm a songwriter. No, you're not. What?
Well, look, she's beautiful and she's born very wealthy and things come very easily to her and she has to learn to work for the things that she cares about.
Work for the things that you care about is the 70s. Do you think in some ways that it's flash versus substance these days? Fame now?
Oh, yeah. Well, look, yeah, absolutely. But I think flash versus substance is a thing that we've always been.
But everybody thinks they're famous now thanks to everything
Instagram.
Whatever,
And I think, you know, yes, I would take an almost different stance on it and say that the world now asks us to curate a certain look for our lives, Instagram, Facebook, and we do that. But we're hiding a lot of the truth of who we are. And Daisy's doing the same thing. This book is about famous people, but it's also about how you present yourself and the story that you're telling, yeah. the narrative that you're selling to the people around you versus how you feel inside and how those things can be so very different.
And what about the way you wrote then, finally, just the way this is presented? I mean, I mentioned it already, but like you have all these characters, say, spread out here, and you may, okay, I'm going to deal with this character today because they're talking all the time, but you have to let them talk in relation to what that last one kind of, is it a jigsaw kind
of? It is. That's exactly what it is. And it felt a little bit like a puzzle writing it, and I hope it feels a little bit like a puzzle reading it in a fun way because, you know, everyone has their opinions on what happened. They don't always agree. In small details, in really big, important parts of the story. So as you're reading it, you have to decide, who do you believe? Whose point of view do you trust more? Who is going through things that maybe you relate to more? And I think everyone will come away from the book with a slightly different understanding of what happened based on who they believe.
Okay, but more people are going to see, with all due respect with the book, more people are going to see it when it comes out.
I mean, that's why you want it to be a TV show.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. She says with a smile. So, just the co-producing with Amazon, big thing, it's a 13-part series, Reese Witherspoon. What's your involvement in it?
It's very informal, you know.
You're not writing a script, are you?
No. Right. They have other people writing it. It's all being produced by Hello Sunshine and Amazon. I'm really, really excited to see it, first and foremost. But they, you know, Reese Witherspoon has an incredible relationship with authors. And so Hello Sunshine's done an amazing job of including me and making me feel like I'm a part of it. So, but like I said, it's very informal. They can do whatever they want.
You can just sit there and watch it happen. It's your baby watching it grow.
It's the easiest thing in the world to just sit back and hand it over to people that I trust.
Yeah, and the decade that you love is the 70s, so it has been done before, and I saw all 10 programs. Did you see Vinyl?
I saw some of Vinyl. Yes. And look, let me say this, like that there are shows that have tried to do this and succeeded in different ways, and I'm interested to see how this one shakes down. I do think this story focuses more on women in the 70s than a lot of the things that we've seen, and that's what I'm proud of about it.
Yeah, because I thought some of the Vinyl ones were actually pretty good, although no second series.
Yeah.
And Martin Scorsese, Mick Jagger, and everybody involved in that.
Yeah, I know. It is like, you know, if there's no second series and Martin Scorsese did it, you know, it's a tall order. But I think that I trust Reese Witherspoon's company a lot and the writers that they have.
Okay, well, the final question is obviously, who's going to play Daisy Jones?
I mean, I know.
Oh, that hasn't been, nothing mentioned yet.
I have no idea. Less than no idea. But I'm like on the edge of my seat.
Right, indeed.
I want to know.
Indeed. And we'll see it when? 2021, maybe?
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah. I have no idea, but these things take a little bit of time.
Indeed they do. Daisy Jones and the Six. It's a great read. And in fact, I'm going to quote Reese Witherspoon. I devoured Daisy Jones and the Six in a day, falling head over heels for it. Taylor Jenkins Reid transported me into the magic of the 70s music scene in a way I'll never forget. The characters are beautifully layered and complex. Daisy and the band captured my heart, and they're sure to capture yours too. Sums up perfectly. Daisy Jones and the Six by Taylor Jenkins Reid, published by Hutchinson, and you will be tonight in conversation with Sinead and Whelan's at 7:30, and you can get tickets online or Whelan's or at the door or whatever it happens to be. Thanks a million for dropping in, Daisy, Janie Macaroni. Thank you a million for dropping in, Taylor Jenkins Reid. Thanks, Taylor.
Thank you.
Good luck. Dave Fanning on 2FM.